Hello, I'm Paul Yeager, and this is the M2M Podcast, a production of Iowa PBS and the Market to Market TV show. I'm Paul Yeager. Thanks for listening. Today, we're going to talk with the president-elect of the National Pork Producers Council. Her name is Jen Sorensen. Her background is an interesting one. It's just something I like to do. Forgive me. I'm curious about where you've come from and where you're going to get to where you're at now. And I just asked Jen a simple question, but I got way more than I expected. I want to say hello to her father, Marvin. That is a key part of the story today that you're going to hear from Jen. We're going to talk about how she got into the pork business. I had no idea when I asked the question. It was partially because of this television program we call Market to Market. Not why we bring it up, but I am so thankful that each and every one of you do have a story on why you watch the show or why you're interested in agriculture. And it's kind of why we're here, to tell stories of those who are involved in rural America, those who have been there, what they're doing to make this world a better place. So today, Jen Sorensen and I, we're going to talk about trade and her background, African swine fever, the outlook, trade issues. We'll cover all of that, but also a huge important question at the end that should not be ignored. That's on this installment of the M2M Podcast. All right, Jen, so you are in Minnesota today. Is that what I heard? How come you're not out harvesting?
Oh, well, I'm getting a little bit of work done. And then as soon as we get done talking, I'm going to go right along in the grain cart with my husband. So I can't wait.
So he's a native of Minnesota. Is that what you told me?
He's a native of Hanska, Minnesota. And he's the youngest of three brothers. And his parents farm, and this is something that we do annually, is always come up and help them with the harvest a couple weekends throughout October. So we're here with our daughter, Anna, who's seven, and we look forward to it every year.
And she can probably do her schooling there. That's the beauty of being able to do it. She could do it from the combine if you needed to.
She's already knocked it out, and we'll be riding along with them too, all three of us. So it's a highlight of the year, of course.
So the grain, you're on the grain side, but now you're on the hog side, president-elect of the NPPC. How'd you get there?
Right. Well, it's kind of a long story if you have the time.
But I do.
I'll tell you, my start in the hog industry actually started, I can trace it back to Market to Market, if you can believe it. So, you know, I grew up in Lee County, Iowa, which is the southeast corner of the state. And my dad's a pork producer. My parents are farmers. And, you know, of course, weekends revolve around the airing of Market to Market and U.S. Farm Report and all of those, you know, beloved farm shows that have such a legacy and history with farmers. You know, and dad would watch Market to Market. And, of course, this was during the early 1990s, you know, when there was a lot of conflict in the hog industry. And, you know, I very vividly remember, you know, Mark Pearson was the host. He was also the host of WHO 1040, the big show, which is another big news outlet here in Iowa. And, you know, I remember him reporting on quite a bit of the conflict as, you know, the integrated systems were growing more in Iowa and the Midwest and North Carolina. The contract grower model was growing more in Iowa, and my dad's a contract grower. And, you know, he, of course, didn't appreciate the way farmers were being portrayed, you know, and he, you know, I very vividly remember him looking at me and saying, you know, you need to do something.
And that's a powerful moment when someone is saying that. We know that farming can be an emotional thing. And I know Naomi Bloom, if you're familiar with her, she's had a similar story to tell about how she got involved. And that's a big moment when your dad turns to you and says, you've got to do something. And clearly it has stuck with you for a couple of years.
Huge. So it propelled me to Iowa State to pursue a degree in journalism and mass communications. This was back in the late 1990s. Then I got a second degree in animal science because I really wanted to be you know, really specialized in swine management, swine communications, and public relations for the pork industry. And after Iowa State, I landed my first job as communications director for the Iowa Pork Producers Association. And that was in, you know, 2001, 2003, where, again, I vividly remember that was when the Master Matrix was going through the State House. And, you know, there was more conflict around neighbor relations and what the Matrix would and could do, the environmental impact of hog barns. You know, hog barns were being villainized, called factory farms and CAFOs, and all that was playing out, you know, while I was the communications person there. So anyway, off to a great start and as my career as a swine industry communicator, but you know, I learned a lot and I was off and running. So after 5 years at Iowa Pork, I joined Christensen Farms to be their communications person up here in Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. And now I'm with Iowa Select Farms today, and I've been in the communications role for almost 10 years. Yeah.
So that is, you know, that's a great background of understanding the importance of messaging and telling the story of the producer. And you look at these boards, and I know that they go through the training. They bring in someone like you with a communications background and say, okay, you're going to get asked these questions. Media is going to call. Here are some things, you know, and it helps them better tell their story. And I'm always appreciative of some of that training that gets done, whether it's with the corn growers or the soybean growers or the hog growers, you know, because it does put it into perspective, because you can easily just go out and say, well, look at that. Oh, this is what I do. It's right here. No. That's, you need to tell me about it. Has the communication side, do you think, helped you as much as, I think you said your other degree was in the animal science side of getting to where you're at today? Which one's helped you more?
Well, I think, you know, I think they both bring a lot of value. I think animal science, swine production is rooted in very biological principles, right, of nutrition science and reproductive physiology and breeding and livestock improvement. And that's very science-based. And you have to understand production and what it takes to improve productivity year on year and run a farm and care for these animals and husbandry in order to be able to tell the story and tell the story of the people. So I was really glad I picked that up, very science-based, but the journalism public relations piece really tells you how to tell a story. You know, the art of storytelling, Paul, is one that you know well. You've built a career in it. You just can't, you know, plop some things on a PowerPoint or just put out some sentences and expect it to resonate. So you really have to tell a story in a way that is truthful and authentic and creative. You really have to be creative. We spend our whole lives trying to figure out how to nail this, right? And I'm guessing you and I have produced thousands of pieces at this point, right? And it's a learning lab. For sure. And especially with the onset of social media and all the digital properties, you can really start to measure and hone in on what's getting people's attention.
Because I need to, I'm going to step back for a minute on the camera so you can see. This is the typical look that you get from when you're trying to present to somebody in agriculture.
Exactly.
They're giving you the furrowed brow because they are so used to a line of BS coming in, and you have to not get caught up in it and know that what you're saying, because they're going to call you out if it's not right, or if you don't believe it, or if it's not genuine. And if that's not helped you be a better communicator, I don't know what has. So I always find that to be a big background. I'm going to go back to your dad for just a minute. What's his name?
Marvin.
And Marvin, and he's in Lee County. So closest to what town?
He's in Lee County. He's closest to Donaldson. Almost 80 years old and still chores his barns.
He does. Okay. And so then, so he's still choring. So does he still watch the show?
Absolutely.
Okay, good. So we'll have to, I need to get him on Twitter so he can submit a question to us some week. We can try to answer one for him. So that's good. Did Marvin have the rule that you had to be quiet when the show was on?
100%. It was, the markets are coming on. Absolutely.
Did he ever get to meet Mark Pearson in person?
Yes. He met Mark and Gary, because Dad's also a farmall aficionado too.
Well, there you go.
And so he would get really great FaceTime when he would do the tractor rides, which he still does today too. He's extremely active in Farmall tractor restoration and of course still the hog production.
That is, if that doesn't say a good background, in fact, I'm sure that logo that's standing behind me, he was very familiar with that logo, and you probably saw that on your TV show. We know that, you know, the show has, it means a lot to a lot of people in certain times of their lives, and we know there's plenty of people who don't know it, and we always have to deal with, well, you're just an Iowa-based show. Well, no, yeah, we're based in Iowa, but we do have a full ag story to tell, whether it's corn and soybeans and the cattle business, and then we get to the hogs, and I'm sure Marvin would be pretty upset when we'd only leave 30 seconds for the hogs, and I try not to do that, but on some... we have this pattern of things and you get into a habit, and I will admit, since I've taken on this role, we've tried to, if there's something extremely important about that market that week, we might get it higher up, especially when it relates. But again, it's, I want to keep everybody guessing. I should keep everybody guessing and switch it up, right?
Well, I very vividly remember, you know, our industry was going through a really difficult time in late April. And I really vividly remember when you told your listeners that you would be the permanent anchor for the show. And I remember that because we were just, you know, in this just state of turmoil and drama with, you know, all the packing plant closures. And here you were just very kind of stoically and somberly saying, I'm going to do it. I'm going to be your permanent host. And I just felt such joy for you, right? In such a terrible time that we were in. So it was really neat. I remember that. And I remember seeing your face on the screen and just feeling joy for you taking on that new position, and was glad to have you telling the story of agriculture.
Well, geez, this turned into a whole lot more of a love fest than I thought, Jen. Thank you. It means a lot. And it's, you know, my father passed 5 years ago, be six, and he was a farmer. And, you know, I didn't have as much of a choice. It was, you know, I'm a little older, and the 80s were terrible. And yeah, for a lot of people, and there wasn't a choice. And there's only so much land, and it worked out. Never thought that's where I would end up, is here we are. But here we are telling these stories. And I feel a little bit of a guidance. And, you know, March and April were ridiculously hard for a lot of people too, both those on the farm. In fact, we were just talking today in the office here. I was like, hey, remember the people that were selling hogs on Facebook? How's that going? I mean, when you heard stories like that this year, what's going through your mind?
Well, you know, we were... I'd back up and say, you know, hog farmers were poised to have a pretty profitable year this year. We had been hit hard with tariffs, retaliatory tariffs. In 2018 and 2019, which really depressed profitability. And so we had youthful enthusiasm for 2020, and we were just very optimistic in January and February, and we're poised to really do great things and improve our systems and keep advancing forward and produce food that feeds the world, right? And then, you know, COVID hit. You know, everyone's got a similar story, but, you know, for hog farmers in particular, it was, you know, incredibly dramatic because we had the packing capacity that we lost. And so, you know, the first thing that went down was our food service sector, which, you know, we have a pretty big role in that in the breakfast category. And then, you know, later on, I refer to it as the Ides of March, right? When, you know, every morning we would be on a group text, you know, as NPPC or communities of producers saying, you know, what have you heard about Sioux Falls? What have you heard about Worthington? What have you heard about Tyson Perry? What have you heard about Storm Lake? You know, just trying to compare information and numbers, say, you know, where are we at now? Okay, we're 11% down, we're 22% down, now we're 40% down.
I don't know why I said that.
What that's going to do to us, how we're going to hang on to our pigs longer, you know, putting in place nutrition strategies, stocking density strategies, anything we could do to hang on to our pigs. And part of that was, where can we donate them? We called 27 different lockers as Iowa Select Farms, and, you know, every producer was calling lockers. Every producer was trying to find a home for those pigs. So, you know, really tough time period, really hard to talk about.
Yeah, it was a group effort, and I know the industry has fought hard to try and claw back. And I go back to the last World Pork Expo that we had. It's been 2 years now. Another situation, you know, one health scare and another. I remember your predecessor, I think it'd be 2 years ago, the president out of North Carolina, and he and your trade rep, it says, you know, we're the tip of the spear, and we knew this was coming, but we hope that better days are ahead. You were hoping for better days ahead. How important is trade still to pork moving forward here into 2021?
Trade is critical. I mean, we export 30% of pork here in the U.S. Real point of pride to us to have not only a strong domestic market, but pork is enjoyed around the world, and it's the most consumed meat protein. So, you know, shout that out to the rooftops. You know, we export pork to over 100 different countries, with China, Japan, Mexico, South Korea, and Canada as our top markets. You know, has been adding value to producers' bottom line significantly for the past 2 decades. And so, you know, as the president-elect of NPBC, this continues to be, you know, a top priority. We just got some recent trade data that, you know, China is up on trade, which, you know, we're pleased with. So our trade figures are up compared to 2019, the same time period, but we are slightly depressed in some of our other markets. And I think that's just because, you know, COVID is a global pandemic, and, you know, and that's a result of that. So I expect growth in markets like Canada, Mexico, South Korea, and Japan here over the next year. Very hopeful of that. So, no secret that trade is a significant piece of the work that we do at NPBC, and the work that I personally work on as well. So,
well, no secret is it's also the U.S. pork is a very healthy, safe product, and there's a great amount of pride that goes into keeping those animals that way. Again, go back to World Pork Expo and your trade people talking about, we make a safe product. You have these outbreaks around the world that are not happening in the United States. I guess back to when you were growing up, yes, we had some of those. We haven't had those in a while. That being said, though, you always kind of have to still be diligent. I would imagine that also helps motivate a producer and an organization to make sure that you continue to be a health safe operation in all of your barns and all and end products.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a priority for us. Health and safety and just a quality product is key. I mean, we make advancements on that every day. And you look at some countries that we, you know, are trying to get access into. I think going back to the importance of trade, and you look at what's happening with China, you also learn the importance of diversifying your portfolio, knowing that China might not always be there for us. You know, we still not only face a 33% retaliatory tariff on pork going into China, but, you know, at some point they will recover from ASF, and we might not have that market. We can't rely on that. And so, you know, a lot of the work that we've been doing and continue to stay focused on is more of those Asia Pacific countries like Vietnam and the Philippines, you know, countries like Thailand, South Korea, Ecuador, Brazil, India. You know, we've got quite a hit list of countries that we need to bust through trade and non-tariff barriers on. And a lot of that revolves around just these, you know, ridiculous notions of you know, U.S. pork has poses some type of health or safety risk. And, you know, those become very political. But, you know, we abide by international production standards, and we're proud of producing a safe, quality, wholesome, and affordable product for our export markets. And so a lot of work to be done at MPPC. We've got a world-class trade team out in D.C., and we just keep at it. Just like farmers, we keep at it. We're resilient. Working with our administration and trying to just bust through those barriers.
What is the prospects of China? I mean, we see these stories about cold storage emptied out there of pork products, them trying to rebuild their products, which has in turn helped the soybean market here in terms of having meal to send over there or DDGs to send to livestock over there. Where's the U.S.'s role? I mean, at what point do you work directly with China, or do you try to work on a global approach with all of these countries? You talked about diversifying your risk. How do you balance a huge market of China versus these other markets around the world?
Yeah, I mean, again, at some point, I think, you know, China's going to rebuild their herd, and it's hard to get accurate data out of China. We all know that. We don't, you know, we don't quite know where they are on rebuilding that, but we do know China loves pork. Loved pork, and they need it, they want it, they demand it. Their government is heavily subsidizing the growth of their own commercial production. At what rate that's going to come back online, you know, I don't know that we know that. But we have a phase one trade deal that we're hopeful that they'll fulfill. I don't think they can get to that many billions of dollars of ag products without including pork in it. Plus, we know the demand is there. Just the unfortunate piece is that we're still tariffed at 33%. So we always say we miss the sales opportunity of a lifetime, which is heartbreaking for pork producers, just because we've been hit so hard, you know, on the retaliatory tariffs. And there's more, I guess, news on the way of more, you know, aluminum tariffs on products coming into the U.S. So we're, you know, kind of bracing ourselves to get hit from more countries. So we're hopeful that doesn't happen. But again, diversifying our exports and our export markets is what we need to do to make sure that we can maintain the exports that we have.
All right, two tough questions to end here. The first one is, let's talk politics, though. What would be the best political solution to help? I mean, you've talked about these tariffs of 33%. Of course, that seems to be an obvious one. But what politically would help the pork industry in general?
I mean, you know, NPPC is a nonpartisan association, and we support the candidates that support agriculture and support farmers. But, you know, we do have to debate, you know, what life looks like with a Democratic leader and what life looks like with a Republican leader, right? And we have to be agile and be able to change and prepare and work with what you have. I mean, that's life, that's business, right? You know, we were very discouraged when, you know, our administration walked away from TPP. And so we're hopeful that there might be an opportunity to discuss that in the future under a Democratic leadership. But, you know, there's pluses and minuses with every administration. So I think it goes back to, you know, working with what you have and being agile and building those relationships and making sure it goes back, Paul, to, you know, being able to tell your story, right? And so there's so few farmers and so many farmers who are members of Congress and in these leadership positions. It's more important than ever before that we're working with them and talking about the importance of agriculture. It's the backbone of our rural economy.
All right, since you are on NPPC, I think this is a fair question, but what's your favorite cut of pork?
You're going to think I'm going to say bacon.
No, everybody has their own.
But, you know, I just love the versatility of a good pork loin roast, and I'm a slow cooker gal. And I embrace fall like nobody's business, which means crock pot season. And so I'm a big pork loin roast with, you know, brown sugar and cranberry and sweet potatoes in the crock pot.
Brown sugar, cranberry, and sweet potato, all in one.
All in one.
What's second place on the pork loin? Because I always like a good pork. I just had a pork loin this week, and I still am always experimenting to figure out what's the best way to make it.
Grill it and slice it and make it a sandwich. Yep. So easy. So versatile. You can grill it. You can bake it. You can pan fry it. You can slow cooker it. It's a sandwich. It's an entree. You can't go wrong with it.
The one that we used was marinating it in teriyaki sauce, grilling it, and then grilling some pineapple to put on top.
I love it. I'm okay with pineapple on, you know, there's the pineapple on and off Hawaiian pizzas. I'm totally on board with that.
Sounds good. All right, Jen. Hope you get to run the grain wagon or the combine or whatever you prefer, or just watch from afar and let the others do the work. I hope you get to do one of them this weekend.
I'm headed there right now. Thanks, Paul.
All right. Thanks, Jen. Again, if you have a story for me, please send it to me. Paul.Yeager, Y-E-A-G-E-R, at iowapbs.org, or market to market at iowapbs.org. Thanks for listening.